Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. Come on in, people in the back, move up a little bit. We have a treat today. Before I introduce our wonderful panelists, I'd like to tell you a little bit about this year's festival. This year we have circus arts. Has anyone been to circus yet? How was it? Woohoo! The circus. It's also the 50th anniversary. So there are a number of reunion events from National Endowment for the Arts recipients, and online there is a wonderful online virtual exhibition of some of the art that has been collected over the last 50 years. So please take a moment to check out the On the Line exhibition, which was curated by the wonderful woman in the hat, Erin. Erin, wave your hand. She's the curator of the 50th online exhibition. The Smithsonian Folklife Festival is co-sponsored by the National Park Service and WAMU. And On the Move, which you're in now, is supported by the Smithsonian Latino Center, the Asian Pacific American Center, and the American Anthropological Association. We came together in collaboration with the Anacostia Community Museum, the National Museum of American History, which has a tremendous immigration exhibit, so please check it out. It opened just a few days ago. So you're here in On the Move, and On the Move is all about journeys to the United States and within the United States. And as you know, the United States is vibrant from the many cultures and peoples and identities that have come to the United States and have been resilient and have evolved into new cultural heritages. So On the Move is all about learning about the many parts of our vibrant culture and also embracing the many people that make up the United States. Today we are honored to have people from the Muslim Community Center of Silver Spring. Assalamu alaikum. The Muslim Community Center itself is a wonderful example of unity in diversity. There are people from how many countries? Almost every country represented in the Muslim Community Center, and they have the challenging task of mediating between and embracing the many cultures that come to the center. Usman, your last word, Sarwar, is the president of the Muslim Community Center, and he is going to be the facilitator of this wonderful group from whom we can learn something about their lives and identities. As you know, the way that we break down barriers between people is to listen to their stories and to tell our own stories. So I encourage you to listen, to participate, and to ask questions. Along with Usman, we have Sabr, who I understand means patience.
One with patience.
One with patience. And Sanjana, whose name means calm and gentleness, and in order, Nazia, who means pride, and Aziz, who is a servant of the Almighty, and who brings us much strength to this session. So I'd like to turn it over to Usman, and please join me in welcoming them.
Thank you, everyone. I just first want to thank Alyssa Sojin, Olivia, and all the organizers for the Smithsonian On the Move and for inviting us. It's a really great honor for us to be here, and it's a pleasure for us to be here. And then quickly, I'll just talk a little bit about an intro and what MCC is. So the Muslim Community Center is one of the older mosques. It's one of the oldest mosques in the Washington, D.C. area. It was established as an idea in 1976, and then the physical structures kind of came on throughout the years. Primarily, it was the idea was started as a education center for youth for weekend school learning. A lot of immigrants came here, migrated from many different nations, and they wanted to make sure that they passed along some of the teachings religiously and also culturally. So that is how the idea of MCC came about. But over the years, it's evolved into many different activities. We do have a weekend school still. It's about over 500 students that come there on a Saturday and Sunday. We also have a very strong interfaith presence. Brother Sabir is one of the past presidents and also has been a pioneer in starting the interfaith culture and also our partnerships around in the area with the Interfaith Council and other groups. So we're very involved in that. We have a seniors committee, which takes care of the seniors' issues. We have a youth group, of which Nazia and Aziz were very integral and are still integral in that. We also have a young adults and professionals group with Sindana as the head of that. And we also have a medical clinic, which was established in 2003. It was a all-volunteer free medical clinic. We're strongly, you know, in belief of healthcare for everyone, regardless of religion, of faith, or gender. And we started out with a very modest clinic of, I would say, 50 patients the first year in 2003. And just last year, we counted about 15,000 patient encounters, which is almost about 5,000 to 6,000 patients. So it's grown tremendously. It's one of the Montgomery County Primary Care Coalition clinics. We don't deny anyone. If you have insurance, welcome. If you don't have insurance, please feel free. You will be seen by anyone. It's almost a full facility. It has dental, gynecology. We do lab work, primary care physician, you name it. And it's on our property. So that's just a little bit about MCC. And what I want to do is kind of ask our panelists a few questions. We'll start with one question and see how far it gets. It's a loaded question, so I'm pretty sure that they're going to have loaded answers for it. And just as a preface to that, with the Muslim community, you know, we kind of internally, and I would say loosely, define it within about three phases now. The first one is pre 9/11, kind of what the Muslim community was at that time. 9/11 was a very defining moment, you know, for our country and also for the Muslim community in America in particular, with the tragedy that happened and also the responses to that. Then there's also kind of this generation that's, I would say, probably like Saber will talk about the pre-9/11, and he was the president when 9/11 happened of MCC. Sanjana and I would say, are probably more, we grew up, like, I would say, maybe from 9/11 up until, like, 2010 in that generation. So we're like the 9/11 generation. We had to grow up in that, you know, culture and whatever came out of it, right? But then these two, it's very interesting. When I started working with the youth group, they're kind of far removed from it. It's the first generation I kind of met that it's history to them, right? They didn't really live through it. So their perspective in terms of what they go through is really very contemporary. And I think you'll find that, you know, their perspectives are very interesting. So with that introduction, I'll ask them one by one. You can answer, obviously keep it as brief as possible, but, you know, don't shortcut yourself. The first question. And the first question is, can you share your personal experience on developing your American Muslim identity, and what does it mean to you to be an American Muslim? So Sabir?
I am.
And speak close to the mic, probably.
I'm on the move participant Sabir Rahman. Alisa gave us these cards. She gave the hanging strings to the young people, didn't give hanging string to the old people. So I have to hold it in hand. Usman has to hold it in his hand. I came to this country in 1964 from Pakistan. I had to go to graduate school at University of Maryland. I had graduated from University of Karachi, University of Maryland. Good. I had graduated from University of Karachi in Pakistan with a master's degree in mathematics. I was 24 years old at that time, and Pakistan was 17 years old at that time. I'm older than Pakistan. I came here to go to graduate school just like many other Pakistanis came here to go to graduate schools, because Pakistan had not yet established the higher learning institution beyond master's degree. They do now. Pakistan government's at a very large expense sent a large number of us to come here and to many other countries to get higher education and go back and serve the country. We did not come here as immigrants. We did not come here to settle. We did not fit the Statue of Liberty slogan, give me your tired, your poor, your oppressed, yearning to breathe free. We had been under colonial rule for a long time, but we had thrown out the colonial rulers about 17 years before I came here. So we were free. And we were all part of the middle and upper class families of Pakistan. So we were well-to-do. When we came here, we wanted to go back, but what happened was some did and some did not. And there was a reason for that. Pakistan had been under colonial rule for a very long time, and the colonial rulers had established an oppressive, frustratingly suffocating system of government to control the population. During that time, all the top jobs were held by the foreigners. For the middle and lower level job, they trained the locals. But they trained them in the same system to oppress and control the population. When the foreigners finally left, those who were trained by their masters for lower and middle level jobs became the rulers. They continued the same oppressive and suffocating system. When we came here, we discovered something. There's freedom. And we can breathe free. We can claim our dignity. And now we have to decide between the love of our country and the freedom. And to complicate the situation further, the US government and the American people and the American employers wanted us to stay here. Employers were after us with very good job because we were highly educated. So the struggle between love of country and the lure of freedom, some were taken by the love of the country, they went back. Some were taken by the lure of freedom, they stayed here. And we became citizens, made good life of ourselves. During 70s, 80s, and 90s, we had no problems. Muslims and Pakistani were well respected in this country, well regarded, and we were well adjusted in the society. Then came 9/11, which is what Usman is talking about. And it turned everything upside down. However, it also created a unique situation and an opportunity. Lot of people turned against us, started saying horrible things about us, but then a large number of people rose to support us, and it created the opportunity. In Urdu, we say, badnaam honge to kya naam na hoga. Roughly translated, it means notoriety also is a form of recognition. When people started hating us and some came to support, they actually reached out to us and said, we are with you. That gave us an opportunity to get to know a lot of people, and when they got to know us, they found out we were not all that bad. And we are making a lot of friends, including all of you. We are going to be all right.
Thank you, Sabir. Sanjana?
Hello, everyone. Let me just get this a little closer. All right. So, unsurprisingly, as we know, as mentioned, 9/11 was a significant event in the development of the Muslim American community. And similarly, it had a very significant impact on our individual identity development. So, while I was aware that I was Muslim growing up, that identity was reinforced after 9/11. Up until then, most people saw my ethnicity, which was perceived to be as Indian, although I was Bengali, as my primary identifier. And then when I was in seventh grade, 9/11 happened, and suddenly there was a shift in how I was perceived. This hijab, which I chose to put on when I was 10, no longer was just an expression of my worship, but it became a statement and a flag that screamed, I am Muslim. So being 12, my religion, while it was important, it wasn't something that I had really engaged in because I was 12. But now I was asked to speak for this entire group. So 9/11 for me really catalyzed the development of my Muslim identity, and it also made me so much more aware of my own Muslimness. On the one hand, it led to a lot of discomfort. You know, I got called a terrorist. I got asked if I had a bomb under my scarf. I probably got a lot more weird and angry looks than the average American got, especially when they were 12 or 13. But on the other hand, it also cemented for me the importance of Islam in my life. I knew that whenever people saw me, the first thing that they would think is a Muslim woman. So I felt the need to rise to that occasion and to be the best version of myself, because I knew that I had to actively fight the Muslim stereotypes that was inundating society. So it also forced me to learn more about Islam than I probably would have at 12. It really required me to navigate that intersection, my identity. So in terms of the question of what it means to be an American Muslim, I have a really hard time answering that question, because the term American Muslim, it really just lumps together two things that I am. It's an American and a Muslim. America is the only home that I've ever lived in. I was born and raised in Maryland. I grew up, you know, trading Lisa Frank stickers, going to Sunday school, obsessing over 90s boy bands, learning the Arabic alphabet, you know, catching fireflies with my friends in the summertime, but at the same time, you know, learning about the stories of the prophets. There was no end point and middle point. All these activities bled together. There was no Muslim activity and an American activity. This was simply who I am. So really, to me, I am an American who just happens to be a Muslim. They aren't mutually exclusive. American Muslim is simply my existence. So, you know, while there's so much emphasis put on one over the other, it's really just two parts, and it's intersection of who I am. Those are two different layers of my identity. They're just, you know, combined together. And that's kind of a little bit of, you know, my response for that first question.
All right, and Nazia?
All right. Hello, everyone, I'm Nazia. So post 9/11, honestly, I learned about 9/11 when I was in fourth grade. I didn't even know what happened. I was actually shocked when it happened. Like, I heard about all these things, like, oh, like, this happened, there was this, and I'm just like, whoa, like, this happened. I was 2 and a half when 9/11 happened, so I when I found out about it, I was like, oh, okay, it's just another part of history, whatever, you know, like, moved on and then played with my toys. But this question, you know, what it means to be an American Muslim, to me, it just means being an unapologetic Muslim American who just lives the American life, you know, and for me personally, you know, it's a constant battle for me, is just finding out what values I believe in as an American and what values I believe in as a Muslim, you know? And that's just something that I'm constantly struggling with. But as a Muslim American, you know, I think being an American in general is just being who you are and being who you want to be, regardless of whatever anybody says, you know? And that's what I love about America. And that's what being an American is just being proud of who you are and just being you, you know? And I think, living in America, you just live with so many different types of people, a diverse community. And I think that's what I love about it, because if everyone believed in the same thing and wore the same thing and, like, everyone was just the same, we would just be boring. And, you know, we're amazing. People love America. Why? Because we're so different and we stand out, you know? And, like, the other day, like, I was buying some supplies for 4th of July, and some of my friends were like, yo, Nazia, like, why are you buying supplies like for a party, like for America, for a country that doesn't love you? And I was like, you're wrong. There are some people in this country that don't love me, but this country gave me the opportunity that I would not have if I lived back home in Bangladesh with my parents. It just wouldn't have worked out. And I am who I am because America has given me the opportunities that I have today. And I am a very proud, unapologetic Muslim American Bengali teen, and that's just who I am.
Great. Thank you, Nazia. And then last, we'll do Aziz.
Alrighty. So, I mean, kind of piggybacking a little bit off of what everyone said, but kind of adding my own twist to it. Alright, yeah. To me, being an American Muslim is embracing my individuality and my differences while at the same time being an American. And kind of what everybody said, but America is a place where everybody, no matter your differences, no matter your differences or who you are, it's a place where you can be who you are. I don't think there is a place where I would be or any of us would be able to practice our religion the way we could here in America. With its freedoms and with the civil liberties that we have here, there's definitely not a place where we could be proud Muslims. And I think that just goes in this day and age. I mean, we have people who pre-9/11 and then in the 9/11 era, and then I guess me and Nazia in our post-9/11 era, we have our own challenges in 2017 with the different things that we have to deal with. But I don't think there's a better time for me to be an American Muslim, seeing as though, although we have, yeah, the hate on one end, we have so much support and love for us. Just by being who we are, unapologetic, and being Muslim, we can, I mean, we're just as American as anybody else, and I mean, I think that's what makes me an American Muslim.
Thank you. Great, great. So hopefully that kind of gives an overview of the intergenerational, I should say, maybe evolution of what the American Muslim community is going through. The only thing I'll add is that I think that we American Muslims kind of feel a little added responsibility to kind of showcase what Islam really is. And I think the best way that we could do that is to open up and meet people and let people ask questions and get to know who we are. You know, and hopefully, you know, you'll love us. So I think to segue into that, Alyssa, maybe we can open it up for questions.
Hey, does anyone have a question they would like to ask?
Okay.
They felt it's something of a burden to carry the whole weight of feeling like they had to represent their particular faith to individuals or to group of people. For example, I was brought up Roman Catholic, and I never felt the need when I was growing up that people would question me and I'd have to represent the entire faith of Catholicism, for example. And I wonder if you found that not only an opportunity, but something of a burden. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your question, sir. I really appreciate it. Honestly, it was both. It was a burden, and it was also, you know, an opportunity, you know? But, like, it was hard. Like, people would ask me, like, why do you have that on your head? And I'm just like, why do you have that towel on your head? And I just, like, look at them, and I used to be, like, so mean. I'd be like, why are you so mean? I would yell at them, like, why? Like, why are you being so rude, you know? But then, you know, as I got older, I was like, you know, I have to respond kindly because they don't know what's on my head. This thing is called a hijab. And, you know, some people don't know that. And, like, growing up, it was, like, I'd always kind of have to defend myself. You know, like, even with the attacks going on today, you know, if a Muslim attack happens, I have to be like, why do we have to apologize? You know, why do we have to say sorry? Because I didn't do anything. These people on the stage didn't do anything, so why do we have to apologize? And, you know, that's where it gets hard. It gets a little frustrated, you know, but we got to keep our head high. And growing up, we would get so many, like, comments. I'm sure me and Aziz, we would be called terrorists all the time. And it's just, like, it's all fun and, like, jokes, but, you know, it hits the core sometimes, you know. And I think for me personally, like, going through all of that, I've learned to combat it with being nice and being kind and just, like, showing them, like, you know, this is who I am and this is what my faith is. You believe in something else and I respect you. I'd like the same respect, you know. And it's tough, but, you know, we're going to get through it. We're going to keep our heads high and, you know, keep going. So that's easy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah. I guess Nazia said it all, but yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's definitely tough having to justify the acts of a couple people. But I mean, Muslims were 1.6 billion of the world's population, you know? So at times, yeah, it's tough, but then again, it's a learning opportunity for those who might not know, like, it's going to be tough to answer, but then again, they're not going to know. So educate them, like, hey, they did this in our name, but that's not who we are or who we stand for. And you can look throughout history. People do certain things in the name of other people, but it doesn't necessarily represent those people and what they stand for. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your question, sir.
Is there another question?
Can I say something? Alyssa, can I say something? Is this on? Oh, okay. The way people ask questions is also very important. Sometimes when they ask for information is very pleasant because you can give the information. But most of the time they ask from a point of view as if they're condemning you. That's what is hurtful. And that's harder to deal with.
The present political climate, especially the ban on Muslim travel into this country, how are you feeling about the present political climate?
I just want to like say a quick thing, you know, like it's tough. Of course it's tough, you know, but like, you know, the president of the United States is trying to divide all of us, you know, but I think what we need to do is come and unite and, you know, come together in unity. And honestly, like, I think we're stronger than ever now with all of our marches, with all of our protests. I feel like I have a huge community like supporting me, you know, and honestly, it's tough. Of course, like, you know, like I'm actually still shocked that he's still president. But, you know, I think we just have to I think we just have to come together, you know, and just support one each other and just be there for all of us. Yeah, if anybody wants to.
So I think I think the current political climate has had two kind of impacts. On the first, it's almost desensitized, I think, the Muslim community in the sense that one thing after another, after another, after another, you get used to the trauma that this community, like, that you've been continually inflicted upon. And that's kind of a, like, when you really, you know, you read the news, you hear it, you know, you're watching the news, and there's yet another thing about Muslims happening, or another person who's, you know, saying something inflammatory about Muslims, you're kind of just like, okay, just another one of those, you know, another incident that's happened. And then, you know, after a certain point, you realize that, you're kind of internalizing all of that. So it's just kind of, it's an interesting place to be because it's very odd to just hear inflammatory statements being said about a group that you identify with over and over again, and then trying to learn to desensitize yourself to that. But I also think on the other hand, it's created a really high level of fear that I don't think the Muslim community in particular has felt since right after 9/11. I know, you know, having been, you know, remembering 9/11, you know, having gone through that experience, you know, I was in high school, I was in middle school, I remember the fear that kind of cloaked the Muslim community at that time, and I feel like it's similarly happening again. You know, the Muslim community worked, and, you know, just the community in general, we worked really hard to understand one another, and I felt like after some time, that did get kind of shred, we were able to dispel some of that fear, but then now we're right back there. We've, like, you know, we had some progress, and we've regressed now, 10 steps backward. Backwards, and I think that's kind of, it's kind of hard because I know, you know, for myself, I'm going to be traveling soon, and I'm like, okay, well, I was born here, but it doesn't, I don't know if that really even means anything, right? Am I going to be able to come back? I was just joking the other day to my boss, telling him, I'm like, well, if you don't see me next week, you know why. But it's kind of, you know, that's kind of the reality of our existence, that, you know, actions that people may, you know, commit very, like, you know, that take very, very easily, and, you know, you don't really think about twice. We have to think about twice. We have to think about, okay, well, what am I going to wear? What am I going to look like? What's my facial expression going to look like? You know, what am I going to pack? Where am I going to, you know, how am I going to respond? Where am I going to go? You know, these are things that we have to consider actively and daily in every decision that we make. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing. The weight of the political climate really is seen and felt in our every interaction and every decision that we make.
Just real quick, I wanted to add one thing. Being the president of MCC, you know, the burden was felt on me initially because, you know, how do you navigate your community through it? But I want to speak to just one point. You know, after the tragedy of 9/11, I think our community always felt like all eyes are on us, and we didn't really have much assistance at that time. We really had to navigate things through ourselves. And also introspectively, you know, at the same time, you know, deal with the trauma, but also deal with being very vocal about what our voice is and what is not Islam. This time around, it's been a little different, and I'll just explain it. So we, I think from the time of January up until now, have had over 1,000, almost 500 people of other faiths come through our doors. They want to know who we are. They want to support us. We've had flowers sent to us. We've had cards from, you know, churches that have been sent to us from their kids and Sunday school supporting our kids. I would really give a shout out to the Smithsonian Folklife Festival. They help us to get our voice. I also want to give a shout out to Oyen. She's back there with the Strathmore Music Center. They've approached us to help us get our voice out. And the difference this time is we have so much support. And I want to emphasize, it means the world to us. Because this time we feel like we have support. You know, before the first time, we were really kind of fending. And it helped us because we had to, you know, think a lot of things through ourselves. This time we're very clear. And the amount of support that's there is really, really comforting for us. And that's why we feel that the best thing is just break bread and have dialogue. We have to learn who we are so that people can speak. You know, we can speak for others, and we have taken on other, you know, minority causes as well, because there are other minorities that are affected, and we realize that. But the difference is that we have a lot of support, and that really means the world to us.
Usman, after 9/11, we did have the support of a lot of people. We are fortunate to be located in Montgomery County. And Montgomery County government is so supportive of its population. And right after 9/11, the county executive called MCC and held first a prayer meeting at MCC, then a press conference at MCC, and then he asked the chief of police to make sure that a police car is always at MCC for the next few weeks. So we got a lot of support. To your question, as far as this travel ban was concerned, since 9/11, travel for us has been very, very difficult. Because when they started random checking passengers at the airports, we were always the random check. One of our leader usually tells people that my middle name is Random Check. When he goes to the airport, he says, "I'm here, Siraj, Random Check, Wahaj, check me." We are always picked. If that's random, then that random is beautiful. We are scared of the airports. I went to Canada driving. On my way to Canada, the Canadian immigration treated me with respect and dignity. On my way back, my own immigration people treated me like dirt. And I felt so bad. So when this travel ban, the first one, was declared, there were so many people who canceled their flights because they were going overseas. They canceled it. It cost them a lot of money because the airlines do not return money. If you buy the ticket and do not go, you have lost the money. A lot of people canceled their flight. They were so scared of the travel ban. And that fear continues to be felt.
Okay, so I think we should go on to other questions. So we only have about 10 minutes, right, Alyssa?
Yeah, good afternoon. The name is Ali, and I'm a naturalized American citizen. I've been in this country since 1978. The reason I might speak this morning is Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson was one of the founding fathers of this country. If you read his book, he has a Quran that he put together to write freedom of religion into the Constitution. I will encourage each and every one of you to get a book from the Smithsonian Institute and read about it. That gives each and every one the opportunity to practice your faith, irrespective of who you are. So that's my point to you guys. Freedom of religion was written into the Constitution by Thomas Jefferson, whose monument is down the street there. Okay? So that way, let's treat ourselves equally, because in the Constitution, every man is equal. Yes, there are evil and good in the society. The portion of the society that is bad is what is happening to us by a set of people causing problems. So as much as Timothy McVeigh that blew up Oklahoma, he's a Christian, he blew up Oklahoma, killed a lot of people. So bad people are there, good people, let's support each other, because there's freedom of religion, according to Thomas Jefferson, in the Constitution. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions.
Well, first, I just want to say that I think this is wonderful that you're doing this today. And I came in a little late, so you may have already spoken to this. But I think that it's just lack of understanding and fear that causes some of these things. So we hear things in the media or on Facebook or wherever, and they may or may not be true, and we don't really know. So my question goes to, is Sharia law a part of the Muslim faith? And if so, can you explain a little bit to us about that and the impact that it would have on people?
Okay.
Sharia is an Arabic word, which means path to the watering hole. Sharia is a path. And some people have started using this word in the legal terms, in terms of jurisprudence. Sharia law is a nonsense term, because Sharia is law. We do not say law, law. There is no such thing as a Sharia law. And you will not find anybody in America who is a Muslim and asking America to adopt a law called Sharia. Only those who are scared of Islam or hate Islam are using this terminology to scare everybody else. If you find somebody who wants to tell you that I am here to install Sharia law in America, come to Muslim Community Center, we'll set him straight.
One more question.
No.
Yeah. Okay, one more question.
I'd like to know how Ramadan is a part of people's personal growth.
So Ramadan is a time of, so first in general, the reason why in the Quran it says that fasting was prescribed to you so that you may gain God consciousness, or the term is taqwa. So that is kind of the very first thing that Ramadan is meant to do for Muslims. It's really a time for us to reflect, to spiritually grow, and for us to kind of recenter ourselves. I know a lot of people use Ramadan, a lot of, you know, Muslims, like, it's this time that we are kind of refueling, recentering our beliefs and trying to kind of, you know, come remember why, you know, why we as Muslims believe we are put on this earth. So Ramadan is a very huge spiritual, it's a time of spiritual reflection and growth. And oftentimes, you know, in terms of how it's celebrated and how that manifests, oftentimes individuals usually put together Ramadan goals or certain things you want to work towards. I know for myself, you know, these are things that were their actions, like, you know, I want to, you know, read these things, or I want to, you know, pray this much. But I also, a lot of it is also just me growing as a person. You know, one of the things that Islam does is that it was sent to perfect our character. So for, as a Muslim, our main goal in life is to perfect our character. It's to, you know, really, like, a lot of the things that we are meant to do to be good people is just really, that is what Islam tells us to do. So oftentimes, you know, Ramadan is one of those times where I'm like, okay, well, is this what I'm working towards? Am I a person who, you know, practices kindness? Am I a person who is honest whenever I can? Am I a person who gives back to community? Am I a person who, you know, makes time for my parents even though things are busy? So really, Ramadan for me is a time to not only, you know, learn about my religion and ensure that I'm kind of staying connected to that, but also make those personal goals to perfect my character, which is one of the things that Islam was sent for Muslims to do. I'll leave some time in case others want to add to that.
Ramadan is like Lent for Catholics, like Passover for Jews, and similar. Yom Kippur. Jews don't fast in Passover? They should. Yom Kippur.
Okay, well, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I hope that our guests will stay for a few minutes in the mixing room so that you'll have a chance to ask them questions.
Also, if anyone ever wants to visit the MCC, learn more about Islam, learn more about a Muslim, or even see a center, see me, and I'll give you my card. And we have some tote bags. Please feel free to take a tote bag if you like.
And please come back at 3:30 when Usman will be in conversation with Hena Khan, who is a Muslim American writer. So we hope to see you then, and please enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.